Scott stood there for several minutes, trying to readjust to the fact that night had become day, seemingly in the blink of an eye. When he turned around and started to walk back to the parking lot, his legs felt like jelly. Not helping matters was the fact that his car was gone. The school parking lot was also empty. He checked his phone, which was not working. He tried multiple times to turn it on without any success. Scott sat for a moment, but that only seemed to make him more nervous. What he needed to do was find people, a person, anyone, someone. So he started to walk. The nearest place he could think of was the diner. Grey Rock Diner, which sat a few blocks from the school, the kind of place that never fully closed and never fully changed. Had a faded sign and windows that always looked slightly fogged, even when they were clean. Scott walked without fully remembering deciding to even go there. His body seemed to choose direction ahead of him. When he reached the diner, the parking lot was half full. A few cars idled near the entrance. Scott pushed the door open, his mouth dry and heavy. The bell above him rang once, and everything inside just stopped. The movement of people, the clatter of dishes, the low hum of conversation, all of it cut at the exact same moment, leaving a silence that held its shape. Heads turned toward Scott from nearly every table. Some people were mid-motion, forks paused halfway to their mouths. A man near the counter still had his hand raised slightly, as if he had been about to gesture while speaking and forgot to complete it. Scott stood just inside the doorway. No one looked away. He felt with a delayed awareness that this was not a normal kind of attention. It was not curiosity or recognition. It was sustained, fixed, seemingly obsessed. The kind of attention that does not happen for Scott, ever. A waitress stepped out from behind the counter. She was middle-aged, wearing a dark uniform with a name tag he could not read from where he stood. Her expression shifted quickly from surprise into something way more complicated. "Aren't you Scott?" Scott tried to place her. He squinted at the name tag. Dottie. That did not make anything clearer. So he just blinked once and then several times. "Yeah. Huh?" The words came out without any sort of meaning. The waitress did not know how to answer that. Instead, she just turned away from him and reached behind the counter. Her movement was quick. When she turned back, she was holding a newspaper. She brought it forward and placed it on the counter between them, which she then gently offered towards him. The front page was immediately visible. A photograph of Scott. His face. He was looking at himself. Above the image, the headline was printed in large, bold type. "Local man still missing." The bell above the door behind him rang faintly again as someone else entered. But Scott did not turn. His attention remained fixed on the newspaper. He crossed to the counter and lowered himself into a chair. The waitress stayed standing, just watching him. Scott began to read. The date at the top of the page did not match the day he remembered. The print layout looked current, structured like a daily edition, not like an archive or a special issue. And beneath the headline was text he had read more than once before it held meaning. He zoomed in each word. Apparently, Scott himself had been missing for 8 days. The article described the timeline in clear, detached language. Last seen leaving work. No confirmed sightings afterward. Phone inactive. Apartment checked. Co-workers interviewed. Parents at a loss. Search efforts ongoing. Police statements included. No leads. Scott read it all without reacting, then again more slowly, as though repetition might introduce an error that would then correct the meaning into something that felt like an answer. Behind the counter, the waitress, Dottie, moved again. She reached under the counter, set a glass of water in front of Scott, and then poured some coffee without asking him if he wanted it. The motions were automatic, but her eyes stayed on him the entire time, tracking his face as though waiting for him to adjust into something more expected. The diner in no way returned to normalcy. Everyone was still watching Scott. Conversations that had paused did not resume. A chair scraped behind him. Scott turned slightly. An older man had stood up from a booth near the window. Work jacket, oil-stained sleeves, hands rough in the way that suggested years of repetition more than recent effort.
Scott!
He stopped near the edge of the counter, close enough now that his voice did not need to carry anymore. His expression shifted mid-step from disbelief into something more grounded, more physical.
Holy crap! Where you been, pal? We've been looking for you!
The waitress slid the coffee closer to Scott. The cup clinked softly against the counter. Steam rose in a thin, steady line. The old man continued before Scott to respond, shaking his head slightly as if trying to dislodge the situation.
You ought to let your folks know you're back. Cops, too. They've been all looking for you. Well, we thought... Well, we didn't know what we thought. You okay, Scotty?
He leaned in slightly now, studying Scott's face with a mechanic's focus. The same way he might inspect something that should not be running but is still somehow functioning.
Where did you go, pal? Where?
Scott looked down at the newspaper again. His own face stared back from the page, unchanged. Official. Already placed into a version of events that had continued without him. He lifted his eyes slowly. Great question, Scott thought. Where had he gone? Two police officers entered the diner. Scott was sitting in a booth now. The presence of the police officers shifted the atmosphere in a way that was subtle but immediate. The first officer was a tall man with a close-cropped haircut and a navy jacket that had the faint stiffness of new fabric, his badge catching the diner light when he turned. The second was shorter, heavier set, with a calm face that did not change as his eyes settled in on Scott. They approached together. The taller one spoke first. Scott. Scott looked up from the newspaper. Yeah? The shorter officer nodded slightly, confirming something between them. I'm Detective Harris. This is Detective Morrow. We just want to ask you a few questions. Scott turned once back to Dottie, the waitress, and then towards the cops. Everyone around them was still watching Scott. Everything he did seemed to be the focal point of their attention. Detective Harris continued, telling him, Scott, you've been missing for 8 days. Your name's been in active search status. Your apartment was checked. Your workplace reported no contact, and your phone's been offline the entire time. Scott blinked slowly. 8 days? That's right, Scott. 8 days. Scott looked down at the newspaper again, and then back at them. That was Scott's response. The two detectives pressed and asked him, Where did you go, Scott? Scott finished the rest of his coffee and then was finally able to form some words. I went to the high school. There was this, at the fireworks on July 4th, July 3rd, July 3rd. I saw something in the sky. And then I was there again, but it was daytime. Scott stopped. How could he go on? Everyone was looking at him like he was insane. The detectives looked at each other. They thought he was crazy. How could they not? He wasn't making any sense. Detective Morrow tried to keep his tone even. Okay, Scott. We're gonna have you come down to the station with us just so we can get this on record, you know, properly. Make sure you're all checked out. Medical, of course, too. How does that sound, Scott? Scott hesitated only for a second and then nodded. Yeah. Okay. There was no resistance in Scott, only a kind of delayed acceptance. Detective Harris placed a hand lightly on the counter. The ride to the station passed without incident. The questions continued in a steady, repetitive rhythm. Where he had been, what he had remembered last, whether he had been injured, whether anyone had been with him. But none of it shifted the core problem, which was that his timeline had no continuity, none that satisfied either side of this conversation. At some point, the questioning just stopped. At some point after that, it resumed in a different room. By the time anything resolved into a procedure, Scott was no longer answering anything new. He was just simply there. When they finally dropped him off, it was now late afternoon. The car pulled up in front of a quiet residential street lined with trees and familiar houses that looked slightly smaller than he had remembered. His parents were already outside before the car stopped fully, standing near the walkway as though they had been waiting in that exact position for some time. His mother reached him first. She did not speak right away. She just grabbed him and held him tightly, her hands pressing into his back, fearful that if she let go, he might disappear again. His father followed immediately afterward, one arm around both of them, his face turned slightly away as he tried and failed to keep his composure contained. The hug lasted longer than any hug Scott could remember getting from them, as though 8 days had built up into layers that could not be released in one single moment. Over his mother's shoulder, Scott looked past them, up toward the sky. It was ordinary again. Blue in places, thin clouds moving at a normal pace. He held his gaze there a moment longer than anyone else would have, and then lowered his eyes and let himself be guided inside his childhood home. That night, Scott lay in his childhood bed. The room was unchanged in a way that felt slightly unnatural. Posters still on the walls, old furniture still arranged in the same positions, the ceiling above him still marked with faint imperfections in the paint that he remembered staring at when he was younger. But now, instead of comfort, the familiar felt like something preserved. He lay on his back and stared upward. Where had he gone? The field, the sky, the cloud, the light that had filled the air without source or origin, the blank stretch where time stopped. 8 days. He tried to connect the dots, but the sequence refused to hold. There was no clean transition between standing in the field and waking up in daylight. No sense of passage. Only two fixed positions separated by something he could not reconstruct. He turned slightly in bed, then stopped, staring at the ceiling again. Downstairs, voices moved quietly through the house, his parents speaking in low tones, the kind of conversation that tries to stay calm by staying soft. Every so often, his name was said, not sharply, just carefully. The next morning, sunlight came through the kitchen window in clean, angled lines. Breakfast was already set when Scott walked in. His mother stood by the stove, even though nothing was cooking anymore. His father sat at the table, hands wrapped around a mug that he was not drinking from. They both looked at him immediately when he entered. There was an effort in their posture, visible and deliberate, to remain steady, to remain loving, to remain normal. "Scott," his mother said gently, "we just want you to know you can tell us anything. Whatever happened, we love you, no matter what." His father nodded once, slow. "No matter what," he repeated. Scott sat down. The chair felt just a little too solid under him. He looked at the table for a moment before speaking. "I just went to the high school," he said, quickly realizing how odd that sounds. He tried to make it less odd, but was not having much success. "The field that night, the fireworks, I saw something in the sky." Scott paused. His hands rested flat on the table, not moving. "And then I was there again," he continued. "But it was daytime. I mean, I went there at night, And then it became the day. Well, I was still in the field though. And then I walked back and everyone says I've been gone for 8 days. Silence followed. His parents exchanged a look, and then his father asked, "Are you on drugs, son?" His mother moved immediately, reaching across the table as if to bridge the space between them. "We'll love you no matter what drugs you're on, Scott. We just want to understand, where did you go, son?" It was at that exact moment that something else hit Scott, even stronger than the fires in the sky. Pam. What the hell was he going to tell Pam? By late morning, Scott was being dropped off at work. He was not driven in like an adult on an ordinary day, but dropped off in a way that felt like a child. His father pulled up near the curb outside the office building and left the engine running for a moment way longer than necessary. "We're happy to keep giving you rides until you remember what you did with your car, son." Scott gave a small nod. "Thanks, Dad." As he stepped out of the car, he noticed his father watching him through the windshield. When Scott walked inside, everyone stopped what they were doing to look at him. Just like the diner. Only this one really stung, because he expected it. He expected the stares. All of the conversations paused and restarted in softer tones. Chairs turned slightly. Heads nodded in recognition. "Hey, Scott," someone said near the entrance. "Good to have you back," another voice added from down the hall. "Hope you're okay." Variations of the same sentence moved through the room as he walked to his desk, each one careful not to press too hard against anything that might break if touched directly. Scott sat down. His desk looked familiar, but not quite his own. A stack of emails had already accumulated in his absence. Most of them flagged as urgent in a way that now felt almost ironic. His calendar was crowded with missed meetings that had continued without him, then resolved themselves into follow-up notes that no longer required his presence. The world had kept working. It had simply removed him from the process. Pam had not said anything yet. That fact sat at the center of everything, quietly organizing the rest of the day around itself. About 20 minutes into work, Scott stood up and went to the break room. Not because he needed coffee. Well, he did, but he went there because it was the only place in the office where people spoke without pretext. The machine hummed when he pressed the button, filling a paper cup slowly, the sound too loud in the quiet space. He stared at it while it filled, and then he heard her, Pam. "Hey." Pam's voice came from behind him, calm and close, just as it always was. Scott turned. She was standing in the doorway, holding nothing, not pretending to be there for anything other than this moment. Her expression was steady in a way that didn't match the rest of the office's careful avoidance. There was concern in her tone, but not distance. "How are you?" she asked. The question should have been simple. If he was a normal man, but now he was not. 8 days missing. That's who he was. Police, diner, newspaper, sky, the field. Oh, and that part where time stopped behaving like time. "Otherwise, I'm peachy. How are you, Pam?" That was the conversation in his head. The missing man. So what could he say? "It's nice to see you." Pam held his gaze for a moment and then nodded slowly. A small smile formed at the edge of her expression. She stepped forward and gently placed a hand on his shoulder. "It's nice to see you too." She let go and walked out of the break room. Scott stayed where he was for a moment, coffee unfinished in his hand, listening to the soft return of office noise behind him as the space filled back in. The rest of the day did not return to normal. It became something else entirely. Emails multiplied faster than expected, arriving in steady clusters. Messages asking where he had been, messages asking if he was okay. Messages that tried to sound casual, but couldn't fully hide their intrigue. His replies were simple, consistent, automatic. I'm back. I'm okay. Thanks for checking in. Hope you're well. By late morning, a rhythm had formed. And then around 11 a.m., his computer screen flickered. A brief distortion across the display that lasted less than a second, but sharp enough that it didn't feel like a malfunction. The icon shifted slightly out of alignment and then snapped back into place. Scott paused mid-typing. The office around him continued without any sort of reaction. No one seemed to notice. And yet on his screen, a second flicker followed. And then another. When Scott looked back down at his watch, the time was now 2:37 p.m. It had happened again. His coffee sat empty beside the keyboard. A report he remembered beginning had somehow been completed. Several emails had been answered in his name, written in the same tone he always used and sent from his account. The work was correct, the responses were appropriate. Entire portions of the afternoon had apparently occurred without him. No one seemed concerned. No one had noticed him staring at the clock. No one was asking if he felt all right. The realization followed him into his manager's office, where he requested to leave early. The request was granted right away. There were reassurances that he should take whatever time he needed and focus on getting better. Everyone seemed eager to extend him patience. After all, he had only just returned from being missing for 8 days. Scott walked. The distance between the office and his parents' house was long enough that most people would have considered the idea ridiculous, but the alternative felt worse. Calling for a ride meant explaining himself again. It meant concern, questions, sympathetic looks. So he walked through neighborhoods and commercial districts, past schools and gas stations and intersections that had not changed during his absence. The world looked normal. The people inside the world looked normal. Everything continued to operate according to rules that seemed increasingly unavailable to only him. By the time Scott arrived home, his parents were visibly surprised to see him. Their concern was obvious, but so was their restraint. They had already asked enough questions for one lifetime and received no answers that made any sense. Instead, they welcomed him inside, suggested he rest, and treated him with the careful gentleness people reserve for someone recovering from an illness that they do not understand. Scott carried a glass of lemonade into the backyard and settled into an old reclining chair beneath a maple tree. The afternoon air was warm. Somewhere beyond the fence, a lawnmower droned steadily through the neighborhood. His plan was simple enough. Sit outside for a little while, clear his head, maybe organize his thoughts before attempting to explain any of this to anyone else. The next thing he knew, the sky was dark. A blanket covered his chest and legs. The lemonade sat untouched on a nearby table. Lights glowed through the kitchen windows. The neighborhood had shifted into its nighttime rhythm without him. He checked his watch. Hours had passed. As he rose from the chair, his attention drifted upward from the night sky. The darkness above the yard appeared unusually deep. The stars were faint, obscured by a layer of cloud that stretched from horizon to horizon. For several moments, nothing happened, and then slowly, the clouds began to brighten. The color emerged gradually, spreading through the sky in broad swaths of crimson that deepened with each passing second. It was not the red of sunset. The glow came from within the clouds themselves, illuminating them from behind until the entire sky resembled a sheet of dark glass lit by distant fire. At first, Scott thought he was looking at ordinary cloud structures. The details continued to sharpen. Streets appeared where no streets should have been. Buildings emerged from the red haze. Entire neighborhoods unfolded overhead. The scale was enormous. Cities stretched across the cloud layer, their roads and rooftops visible in impossible detail. The images shifted continuously. One landscape dissolved into another. A coastline appeared, followed by dense urban districts crowded with structures Scott had never seen before. People moved through these places. Cars traveled through these roads. Lights glowed in these windows. The scenes carried the ordinary rhythm of daily life, as though he were looking down upon distant locations from a tremendous height. And then the haze appeared. It descended from above each scene in thick red curtains that spread steadily across streets and rooftops. Wherever it moved, details vanished beneath it. Entire city blocks disappeared. Forests vanished. Shorelines vanished. People were swallowed by the advancing red. The process repeated again and again. Different places emerged from the clouds, only to be consumed moments later. Villages, cities, farmlands, mountain roads. The same red veil descended upon all of them. There was no panic visible from this distance, no dramatic catastrophe. The haze simply advanced and everything it touched ceased to be visible. For a brief moment, one of the places forming within the clouds belonged to his own town. Familiar streets appeared beneath the red glow. Buildings he passed every day emerged from the shifting sky. The gray rock diner stood at the corner of an intersection he knew by heart. The haze reached it, and the diner vanished. The streets vanished. The town vanished. Moments later, the clouds collapsed back into ordinary shapes, leaving only darkness overhead. Scott remained in the yard for a long time afterward, staring up at the sky that now looked completely normal. The vision had left no trace behind. The stars had returned. The clouds drifted quietly eastward. There was only one person Scott had ever heard of who described seeing something like this. His cousin, Danny Mercer, had spent years insisting that faces appeared in random places. He claimed they watched him from clouds, reflections, wood grain, television static, and crowds of strangers. The stories had grown stranger with time until they eventually stopped being stories altogether and became evidence of a problem everyone else could see except Danny himself. The family had spoken about it carefully for years. The town had spoke about it less carefully. Eventually, Danny Mercer disappeared from public life altogether and was transferred to the Longfellow Institute. Lying awake that night, Scott found himself thinking less about the visions and more about a possibility he had spent his entire life rejecting. Maybe his cousin Danny had not been seeing faces. Maybe his cousin Danny had been seeing the future.